I'll explain the topic, and I'll explain even why it's important and what will be implications of it. There is something which is called a ger toshav. Why is the ger toshav important? That we're going to see very, very quickly. We normally, the way that we look at things is in a very yes, no, you know, zero, one, binary. Either you are Jewish or you are not Jewish. And there is nothing else which is in between. And what we're going to learn today is that it's actually far more complicated. Now, there's two potential, I'm not going to use the word explosive, although you could if you'd want to, implications of what I'm going to say. One is that as we move on, we may find something totally revolutionary in terms of the whole issue of women and performance of mitzvot. That's on the one hand. And on the other hand, we may very well see things which are significant in terms of the discussion of Shemitah. Now, that actually you should have known before I even started, because essentially that's all that's on my mind right now, and that's all that I'm dealing with right now, and it's all I care about right now. So even though they gave me they asked me what I would teach, I actually changed it at some point. They said, oh, I'll do Ger Toshav, and they had no idea what I was talking about or where I was going to go with this. So I will now try to explain to you what it is exactly. But as I said, we'll see the sources, and then we're going to get to some of the implications. If we had more time, I would actually tell some really interesting stories along the way. So let's take a look. We have the sources, and we will begin in the beginning. The first thing is, and we don't have to be that technical, and I cut out a number of the sources, and all I want you to note is something that you've noted, something that you've heard and you've seen, and you just may not have been all that careful about, because we didn't know that we should. We get to a verse, for example, like Shmot Perek Kaf Gimel Pasuk Yud Bet. We could have chosen those that are actually more popular than this one, but that's a good one. Sheish Yomim Taseh Maasecha. 6 days you should work. Uv'yom HaShviti Tishbot, on the seventh day you rest. L'man Yanuach Shorcha V'cham Morecha. In order, we want to make sure that your ox and your donkey rest as well. V'yinafesh Ben Amatcha V'hager. And what's the ben amatcha? Is the son of your servant, of your handmaiden, the hager, and this ger. Now, I don't want to translate ger for the moment, but we know that ger, we can translate as stranger. Immediately, whenever you see the word ger, there's going to be one of two possibilities. Either you're talking about what we would normally call a ger tzedek, which would be a righteous convert, and the other would be what's called a ger toshav, which is what we're going to learn about more today. To say that it's talking about a ger tzedek, that I have to have some special thing, oh, make sure that the ger tzedek keeps Shabbat as well, seems preposterous. Because when it says, you know, even a Aseret Dibrot, you know, ata uvincha, who's the ata? The ata is the Jew. And we don't make any distinction between the Jew if you're born Jewish or if you've become Jewish because you accepted the mitzvot upon yourself. That should not make any difference. So therefore, this should be something which is very clear, not the ger tzedek. Now, there is a problem here, and the problem is not in the Torah. The problem is in the Gemara. We're going to see later on, and if we want, we can cheat a little bit, and we can look down to try to find it. There's a Gemara where Reish Lakish teaches us that, this is all the way in Source 21. In Source 21, V'amar Reish Lakish, Nachrish HaShavat Chayav Mita. If a non-Jew kept Shabbat, that person is guilty of a death penalty. Shenemar v'yom v'layla lo yishbotu. Amar Ravina afilu sheni b'Shabbat. It doesn't have to be Shabbat. You know, Shabbat we can say is a present that God gave to the Jewish people. It says, no, it's not just Shabbat. Even if he chooses Monday, which by the way is very convenient that it didn't say Friday or Sunday, because that would have sparked some kind of a conversation. So it says, "Udachashva gabi sheva mitzvot ki chashev sheva al tase kum maseh lo chashev." So it says, "Hold it! Is this one of the seven mitzvot b'nei Noach that the Noachites are not supposed to keep Shabbat?" It says, "No, all the mitzvot are positive things, and this is something which they shouldn't do." So right away we realize a non-Jew can't keep Shabbat, and that's what it says over here. So I go back to my first source and I say, okay, so who are we talking about? If we're talking about somebody who's not Jewish or 100% Jewish. Other way around. If a person's 100% Jewish, I don't have to teach it. If the person's not Jewish, they're not allowed to keep Shabbat. So what is it saying over here that this ger, this stranger in our midst, or the alien, may be refreshed? You realize how bad the English translation is. So who is this talking about? In source number 2, which, by the way, is an extension of the Shemitah laws, this is in Parshat Behar, where people could run out of money. Now, achicha is your brother, which means another Jew, male or female. Umatayo do imach, v'echzaktabo ger v'toshav v'chay imach. Now, that just became a little more interesting, that if your brother is needy, then make sure that you help him. Make sure that you're going to reach out and that make sure they're not going to be in incredible need. But then it says, v'ger v'toshav v'chay imach shall live with you. Now, this would create a mitzvah tzedakah for whoever is included in this verse. Rashi writes, ger v'toshav v'eza toshav. What are we talking about? So here Rashi teaches us something, and this is going to be our beginning. Kol shekibel alav, shelo la'avod avodah zarah, v'ochel nevelot. We're talking about somebody, all that they've accepted upon themselves is one thing according to Rashi. They will not be idolaters, which means one of the things that we know about the land of Israel, and this is a very biblical perspective, the land doesn't tolerate people who worship idolatry. So what if there was an individual who says, no, I will not worship idolatry. I swear I will not worship idolatry. He goes in front of a Beit Din and says, I won't worship idolatry. But the person still eats nevelot. Now, why of all things, nevela is non-kosher food, non-kosher meat. Why of all things did Rashi choose that? We'll see in a moment. There's multiple reasons. One, because the Gemara says it, and two, because the Torah says it. We'll have to decide which one is more important. But there is this person, and that's really what's interesting, that I have a mitzvah to help this person, to give them a helping hand, and this person is clearly not Jewish. All that they are is somebody who is not an idolater. We continue in source number 4. It talks about taking advantage of people. Lo tashok sachir aniva avyon me'achecha. Again, your brother you shall not take advantage of, oppress. O migercha asher ba'artzecha bisha'arecha, or the stranger. Here Rashi says, migercha, your stranger, zeger tzedek, that person's Jewish. Bisha'arecha, zeger toshav ha'ochel nevelot. So again, he gave us that same kind of definition. He didn't mention over here, which he should have, that he has accepted not to worship idolatry. That's why we allow him to live among us. But the person still eats nevelot. Why the emphasis on nevelot? Well, source number 6, which was actually stated prior to this in Dvarim, back in Perek Yudalid. Lo tochlu kol nevela. Do not eat anything which is called a nevela. A nevela is a animal which is not kosher. The way that the animal is not kosher is, let's just say your cow dies, right? It dies, right? You can't eat it because it didn't undergo shechita. But it says, what do you do with it? Leger asher b'sherecha titnena. Give it to the ger in your midst. Now, this couldn't possibly be the ger tzedek, because the ger tzedek has accepted all 613 mitzvot. So who is this ger? Rashi says, leger asher b'sherecha, in source 7, ger toshav, shekibel alav shelo lavod avodah zarah, v'ochel nevelot. So Rashi's pretty consistent on what exactly is a ger toshav. A ger toshav is somebody who does not do idolatry, but does eat nevelot. And now you understand why we say he eats nevelot, because the Torah says, what do you do with the nevelah? You give it to the ger who lives in your midst. So therefore, we realize that in our Israel, in a biblical society, there are those who are born Jews, there are those who become Jews, and then there are those who are not Jews, but what exactly are they? So now we're calling them a ger toshav, a stranger that lives with us, but this stranger I want to learn more about, because again, also we've seen along the way that he keeps Shabbat in some way, even though Rashi had ample opportunity to tell us about him keeping Shabbat, and that he didn't tell us at all. Source number 8 tells us that the ger toshav amor le'inyan ribit mahi. What is the status in the ger toshav regarding interest? And I'm not going into the Gemara right now to explain what this means, because this is the verse, you should strengthen him and so on and not take advantage. Implication is not to lend with interest. So here Rashi defines in the Gemara, so far we saw Rashi multiple times in the Torah. Here Rashi says, what's a ger toshav? His commentary to Bava Metzia, source 9. Shekibel alav lo la'avod avod chavim v'ochel nevelot. By the way, pretty consistent now. We realize that that's what Rashi will keep on telling us. He also says, "Al tikach menu k'tiv achecha koy v'chi k'tiv ger toshav l'inin v'chay imach k'tiv shata mitzaveh l'hachiyato," that you have a moral, legal, halachic obligation to help this person, which means by virtue of not worshiping idolatry, he now is a beneficiary of all kinds of privileges, including one of preferred loans and one of that we need to take care of him because this person lives with us. So again, if you didn't know anything that I've said till now, you now have been introduced to a new category of person who is not a Jew, but he's not a non-Jew, but he's something else. The Gemara in Yevamot, Ger Toshav, and you're probably wondering, why do I keep on going back to that again and again and again? But this time he added something. And he was also commanded regarding the Shabbat. Now, what Rashi is about to say is fascinating and should be a whole class independent of what we're doing now. Rashi tells us, and this is based upon other sources of Gemara in Chulin and a Rashi in Chulin on page 5. The Rashi tells us that whoever is guilty of, well, let's say the other way around, whoever keeps Shabbat attests that God created in 6 days and rested on the seventh. Whoever breaks Shabbat is therefore, according to Rashi, attesting that God did not create the world in 6 days. Rashi therefore just now told us that somebody who breaks Shabbat is akin to idolatry, so therefore, based upon this individual who now has accepted upon himself not to be guilty of idolatry, therefore he has to keep Shabbat. Now, by the way, that's very strange, because if that's the case, every single Ben Noach is not allowed to do idolatry, so therefore every single Ben Noach should be obligated to keep Shabbat, and we just now learned that any Ben Noach, Reish Lakish taught us, any Ben Noach who keeps Shabbat is guilty of a death penalty, because that's a present to the Jews and not non-Jews, which means that now we, hopefully you all recognize that I just made a very simple topic complicated, because now we have a quandary, because what exactly is the status in terms of Shabbat for this whole class of individuals? And we saw a pasuk in the Torah that's part of our problem and part of Rashi's motivation, that Vayinafash had to do with the ger. And if the ger is a ger tzedek, then why bother telling me that? So obviously it was talking about somebody else. So that, as I say, I'll say it again, that's why we now realize, hopefully, that we have a quandary and we see how Rashi tried to deal with this. Without resolving this yet, let's look at source 12, because this now is going to take us to a whole nother place and help us understand the idea a lot better. This is a Gemara in Kritut. Tanu Rabbanan. Ger Toshav mutar lasot melacha b'shabbat la'atzmo ki Yisrael b'chol shel mo'ed. That's a fascinating definition. The Ger Toshav is allowed to do work on Shabbat just like a Jew on Chol HaMoed. Now, you may not know this, but a Jew is not supposed to work on Chol HaMoed. But the Jew on Chol HaMoed, there's lots and lots of exceptions when they can do work. So it's saying that the Ger Toshav is like the Jew on Chol HaMoed, which means, again, Chol HaMoed is it's sort of a hybrid. Is it Chol or is it a Moed? Is it Chol as in a weekday or is it Moed as in a holiday? And of course, by the title, you realize it's both. It's both Chol Shel Moed. So being a hybrid, we don't know exactly what is the dominant identity of it. So therefore, there's this contradiction, this inner contradiction, and it has little aspects of both. We also don't know what a Ger Toshav is. Is a Ger Toshav, he's not a Jew, but he's not a non-Jew, and he's someplace in the middle. So therefore, it's really perfect that this first opinion says, oh, you know what? Let's take the other hybrid and throw it on this hybrid and essentially say that, I hope you just followed that, that you take one hybrid and throw it on the other hybrid, and then you say, oh, the Chol HaMoed status of the Jew on Chol HaMoed is essentially what the Ger Toshav does on Shabbos, which means that he is not completely that he can do anything, but there's also lots and lots of things that he can do. Rabbi Kiva Omer, Yisrael B'Yom Tov. Then no, he's like a Jew on Yom Tov, which really is interesting as well, which means he can cook and he can carry, but he can't. There are other things he can't do. So it's also like a different kind of a hybrid. Yom Tov is also a type of a hybrid, you know, compared to Shabbat or to the weekday. Rabbi Yossi Yom Ger Toshav Oseh B'Shabbat La'atzmo Ki Yisrael B'chol. He says, now notice the emphasis on the atzmo. Rabbi Yossi says that he's allowed to do work for himself, But we'll see in a moment what that implication is. Reb Shimon, Reb Shimon Yochai, Omer, Echad Ger Tosha ve'Echad Eved v'Ama HaToshavim Osin Melacha b'Shabbat La'atzman Ki Yisrael b'Chol. Right, they're able to do it, you know, just like all of these people can all do work. Now, one thing that I really hope that you realize is that if you're confused, it's excellent, because we see that this is confusing because even the Tanayim couldn't exactly agree what exactly is the status over here. But I do want to come back to the last two opinions, because they seem to see to actually say the same thing. And that is that this individual can't ger toshav oseh b'shabbat la'atzmo, right? Or the second one, osin melacha b'shabbat la'atzman. They can do it for themselves. What's the implication? That they can't be a Shabbos guy. They can't do work for us. Which means if there is a ger toshav, but by the way, now you blew it completely, right? Which means, do you realize the implication of this? It's essentially telling us that in the land of Israel, there can't be a situation of a ger toshav. Sorry, let me say it differently. Opposite, sorry, wipe that out. In the land of Israel, there can't be a situation of a Shabbos guy. Because if he's allowed to be here, then he's a ger toshav. He's allowed a ger toshav, then he can't do any work for us. Right? He's allowed to do work for himself because he's not Jewish, but he can't do any work for us. So therefore, essentially what we just now did is that we wrote out the ability of there being a Shabbos guy in the land of Israel. So that, I think, is interesting, because that is really the implication of what we just now read. Rashi, in source 13, tells us, Ger Toshav, Shekibel of Shalol of Odovar Chachavim, Kegon Ne'eman, which is contextual, Osem Melacha B'Shabbat La'atzmo, B'Davar Ha'avad, right, like we have, Ki Yisro B'Cholo Shemoed, Ki Yisro B'Yom Tov Ochol Nefesh, and that was explaining those first couple of opinions. And the question ultimately be, which one does Rashi agree with? Rabbeinu Gershom, this is the Rabbeinu Gershom. This is, right, the one who reportedly made, I say reportedly, because I'm not sure if there's any real evidence of that, that takana that you can't have, that one cannot have, be guilty of polygamy. Ger Toshav, Shekibel of Shalol Avod Avod Chachavim, Velo Kibel Alav Shar Mitzvot. Okay, so that's really important, because the way that he's framing it, a Ger Toshav is somebody who's accepted upon himself one category of mitzvot, but not all the others. Ki Yisro b'cholo shemoed, klomar, kevin sheyesh bo k'tzat geirut. Now that is actually the word, the phrase that I was looking for, k'tzat geirut. So what exactly is k'tzat geirut? Because you would have said to me beforehand, it's one of these things, either you're Jewish or you're not. There's no, right? Either you're pregnant or you're not. There's no such thing as being a little pregnant. There's no such thing as being having a little geirut. So he says, no, this is a situation of k'tzat geirut. Ein oseh kol melacha b'shabbat, elam kein, ein lo ma yochal odavar avod. Which means, according to the first opinion, he doesn't do work on Shabbat unless he needs to. He's nothing to eat, or he's going to lose, then he can do it. So essentially, there is a status of Shabbat, but it's not an absolute status. And the other opinion, ki yisro b'yom tov, ein oseh melacha acheret, elam machshirei ochel nefesh bilvad, just like we do on Yom Tov. Okay, now, if that first series of arguments between the Tanayim wasn't good enough to confuse us, there's another one, and that's over here in Source 15. This is a Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Meitve. Eizu Ger Toshav. So we have a Braita saying, so what exactly is this Ger Toshav? First opinion, we'll see that it's Rabbi Meir. Kol shekibel alav b'nei shlosha chavirim. By the way, chavirim is interesting, because it didn't exactly say dayanim. Chavirim is a certain status, but what does he say? Shelo lavod avodat chachovim. I will not be guilty of idolatry, and that should remind us very much about what Rashi's been telling us all the way through, which means essentially you can now have a thesis, and that is that Rashi has adopted the approach of Rabbi Meir. The Chachamim omrim, kol shekibel of sheva mitzvot shekibel olein b'nei noach. Which, by the way, I think before I started today, if I would have asked you, so what is a Ger Toshav, I think that would have been the preferred answer that you would have given me. You would have said, oh, it's somebody who accepts the Sheva Mitzvah, which is, of course, by the way, also a little bit funny, because every Ben Noach has to accept upon himself, or should, the Sheva Mitzvah. But over here, the implication is you can have somebody who doesn't accept the Sheva Mitzvah. It's much lower grade. All he's accepted is, I'm not going to do idolatry. That's the Chachamim. Acherim Omrim, Elu lobo leklal ger toshav. That's not a ger toshav. Ela eiz a ger toshav. And this is going to be perplexing. Zeger Ochel Nevelot. He eats Nevelot. And now, again, why is Nevelot chosen? Because that's the Torah said, that you give your Nevelot to this Ger. Shekibel alav l'kayim kol mitzvot ha'amurot b'Torah chutz mi'aser Nevelot. It's somebody who's accepted all 612 commandments with the exception of one. And he says, I'm not going to, Nevelot, I'm still having my Nevelot. Now, I hope that you appreciate how interesting that last opinion is. I also hope you appreciate how confusing all this is. And I want to add one more question to this. This last opinion of the Chachamim, of the Acherim Omrim, is that an absolute or is there a range? Let me explain what I mean by that. When he says that a Ger Toshev is somebody who accepts all commandments other than Nevela, does that mean he has to accept all 612? Or can he say, listen, I have a favorite 45 mitzvot that I'm accepting, and the others I'm not? Which means, essentially, for all those years we've been told in Judaism you can't pick and choose, is this Ger Toshev allowed to pick and choose and say, what's a Ger Toshev? It's somebody who says, listen, I'm picking and choosing. I want to do that. So now we see that there is a concept like this. There is a concept. Again, if we just now read that last opinion correctly. So now, again, if nothing else, I do really hope that you appreciate that this whole topic is interesting, but we don't know what to do with it yet. So let me now show you what we can do with. Let's then, again, let's try to go a little bit further and see, you know, what we can do with all of this. Rashi writes in 16, Ger Toshev, Ein Oved Kol Chavim, Ubar Minei Shel Oved Kol Chavim, Hu Bechol Shar Averot. That all that he's accepted is idolatry, and aside from this, he does all the Averot, which goes back to this point. We really have, you know, an argument about what a Ger Toshev is. One says he only accepted one, and the other said he accepted all six, which means one opinion has him accepting one mitzvah, and the other has him accepting 612 mitzvot. So you realize now the range of opinion between these is really fascinating. What I implied before actually is said in Tosfot, source number 17. Ger Toshev, and now it says one asamalacha latzmo. He's allowed to do work for himself. Mikan kasha leperisha kunters perach acholetz. That's difficult to what Rashi said back in Yevamot. To ka'amar v'yinafash ben amatcha v'hager zeger toshav. When it talks about the non-Jew resting, Rashi said that, you know, he doesn't do work on Shabbat. But if that's the case, you know, what exactly is going on over here? L'cheni yishlomo dihimari le'inin shlo asamalacha avor rabo. So I told you this before, now you see Tosfot said it. That it, when it says that he can't do work, that he rests from doing work for his master that he works for. That means that, going back to this point, that you cannot have a Shabbat guy. Avol atzmo shari, mikan pasak ri, Rabbeinu Yitzchak, that's Rashi's great-grandson, Rabbeinu Tam's nephew. From here, the re-ruled, shemutu laniach la'ovid chav masot melachto b'Shabbat b'vei Yisrael, that you're allowed to have a non-Jew, an idolater, working in a Jewish house, avor atzmo, but only doing stuff for himself. He can't do things for us. By the way, I do want to qualify just halacha l'maaseh on this, if I follow the psak of the re. So let's say I have a non-Jew in my house. Theoretically, according to this, I cannot ask them to put on the dishwasher. I can't ask them to wash the dishes. If they decide to wash the dishes by putting on the dishwasher, that's fine. That they didn't do for me, that they did for themselves. And I hope that made sense. I can't ask them to do work, but I can't ask them to do something which I can do. I can wash the dishes. So they can wash the dishes by putting on the dishwasher, because they're not obligated not to put on a dishwasher, and that they did for themselves. Just to show you how this could possibly be understood. In source number 18, it's the same bottom line opinion. The other one was in Kritot. Over here, it's in Yavamot. It also gets to the same point. That he can't do work for a Jew, but he can do things for himself. The Rashba in source 19 writes, Hager zeger toshav, pirush Rashi, shekibel lov shel avodah zarah v'ochel nelviyot, umazhira katuv al Shabbat. Again, quoting Rashi about this Shabbat problem. Because Rashi was like a little stronger, that he, no, of course he has to keep Shabbat, because otherwise, Ve'enu mechuver. The Rashbis says, makes sense. Tegir Toshev, Hainu ben Noach. He's not Jewish. Ve'enu muzhar al Shabbat. Adarabba. Amur goshe Shabbat chayev mitah. He can't be, we can't say that he keeps Shabbat. Ve'amur of Idi bar Gershon, Amur of Adi bar Ava, Halachakur of Shimon, Ve'lo amur Torah Shishbar Ager, Ve'evet Elomi melachtenu. It goes back to the same point I've already said a couple of times, that he is allowed to do work for himself, but not work for us. Okay. Tosfot Yishanim quotes something which is actually in the Gemara, and it's source 20. Zer Ger Toshav, Ve'lo hispik lomolo, Bein Hashmashot. So I want to stop for a second and ask a whole different case. What would happen, you know, in order to become Jewish, what do you need to do? You need a combination of things. If you're a male, you need to have a Brit Milah. On top of that, if anyone wants to become Jewish, they need to stand in front of a Beit Din and say that I accept upon myself the mitzvot. If, by the way, a non-Jew stands in front of a Beit and says, I accept 612 mitzvot, that's it. That's not considered to be giur. If they didn't know all the mitzvot and they say, accept all the mitzvot, they don't know them. That's it. That giur is good. That means that this ability of the ger toshav to say, no, I don't want to do a mitzvah, that's really unique to ger toshav, and a convert cannot do that. So to convert, you need to stand in Beit Din. You need to mail to as a Brit Milah. And then there's one more thing it is, and that is to go into the mikvah. Okay? So those three elements. There was a case around 150, I should probably look it up exactly. There was a case that happened over 100 years ago of an individual who had the Brit Milah, and the doctors told him that he can't go into the mikvah yet because it was dangerous. He has to wait for the wound to heal. And then there was a Shabbat in between. So then the question came up, so what should he do on that Shabbat? Is he still a non-Jew and he's not allowed to keep Shabbat? Or is he considered to be a Jew and he has to keep Shabbat? So I hope you all appreciate the question. This question caused a big fight. Now, it happened in Yerushalayim, and the rabbi of Yerushalayim at the time was Rav Shmuel Salant, but he was on a fundraising trip. And he left somebody else in charge. So the guy that he left in charge found out about this ger, and somebody came and said to him, you know, what should he do? And he found out on Shabbat in the afternoon, and he says, quick, somebody go home, go over and tell him he's got to break Shabbat. So he broke Shabbat. And then all the other rabbis in Yerushalayim, who basically were not that happy with this individual, and said, well, how can you say such a thing? First of all, why don't you talk to any of us? And who are you, Bechlel? Who put you in charge? Well, the answer is Rav Shmuel Salant. And you blew it. That's wrong. That was just the wrong thing to say. And that was the wrong psak. Now, we learn a little bit about the story. And by the way, there's a great deal of literature on this. And I, at the end of the sources, I gave you some things about it. The enterprising individual will realize that they can just take all of this and they can give a whole separate shiur on this. But if you look at source number 22, there's a book which is called the Binyan Tzion. And that's for Zionist reasons. It was called the Binyan Tzion. It's Yaakov Ettlinger. He was a rabbi in Germany, but the first 15 or so questions in the book were all about those returning to Israel. And do you bring a Korban Pesach? Do you try to build a Mizbeach? Do you try to build a Beit HaMikdash? So a whole bunch of Zionist questions. So he called the book Binyan Tzion. We have the exact date. We have the place. Kaf Vav Iyar, Taf Resh Tet, April, right? What is it? May 18th, 1849. And he writes it, L'harav Agon, Mor Rabbeinu, Harav Asher Lemel. Right? Agon Av Beit in Tegir Toshav Galin, Uka'et Mishkan Kvodo, B'Yerushalayim Yer HaKodesh. So this Rabbi Asher Lemel was the one who was in charge that day. And he got attacked, so he started writing different rabbis. Was I right? So he writes, Yilam Deinu Rabbeinu, no rabbi, tell us, please. There was a case that came up, and he gives us the date, Yom Gimel, Kaf Gimel Yerech Adar, the exact date, by the way, I worked out, I looked up for you, it is on the 28th of March, 1848, so you see the question took a while before till it gets to Rav Ettlinger, and now you realize that this thing has caused a big argument, because a year later, they're still fighting about it. Hervar po nimul eino yudi achad. I was made aware of a nimul, somebody who had circumcision, but he wasn't Jewish. By the way, you see the way he frames the question. Shabai nemi medinat Morocco. And he came here from Morocco. By the way, that's not true, and confused 98% of the people who ever related to this question afterwards. It happens to be the guy was not from Morocco, but rather was from America. It's a misspelling in the thing, but everybody copied Morocco afterwards. The reason I'm so sure about that is go back to the date that this happened. It says that it happened on Yom Gimel, Kaf Gimel, Irech Adar, which, as I told you again, was the 28th of March. So he came, L'shem Geir, B'fneinu B'beitin Tzedek Kal Ashkenazim. By the way, the odds are, if he were Moroccan, he would have gone in front of the Beitin of the Sfaradim. I'm just saying that's the odds are of the case. V'kibel alav mitzvot, he accepted the mitzvot, kidin, right, Torah HaKodesh, uv'shabat kodesh, l'acharav, adayin lo yah nitrapem milato, he hadn't healed yet from his brit milah, v'lo toval odenu, he hadn't gone to the mikveh yet, higidu li lemor, mizriyas to mitzvot, eichu nishar b'shvitat Shabbat, and people were telling me that it was wonderful the man was so careful to keep Shabbat properly, and even though he's a chodesh sheyesh bo sakana, he still didn't let a guy, you know, heat up any water or do anything for him. And I said, Rav Lemel says, v'shafti lam ledati lo maboyev shemutu alo lasot melacha b'shabbat el afilu mechuyav. He goes, as far as I'm concerned, he's obligated. So essentially, I'm not going to read through the whole question and answer over here, but this was the question that came up. And the answer that he gets is, you blew it. I think that this person... Right, he writes over here a little later. Tshuva, chakarti b'sher makamot shemakam geirim. He says, I investigated, you know, people that deal with conversions. V'nemar li, and they told me shagam sham me olam lo hikpidu al ze. No one was ever careful of that shelo yishmor hager shabbat kodem atfila. Nobody was ever careful about this. And by the way, there's a whole nother way of looking at all of this. And that is that the Jewish people at Mara were commanded to keep Shabbat before Har Sinai when they accepted the Torah and when there was a Brit Milah. Brit Milah was in Egypt before there was a mikveh. The mikveh is said to be by Har Sinai. And that's part of his argument over here. Part of his argument, it says later on, is I'm reading the Al Yisrael and Starv Yisrael b'Mara v'chinuch miktuv m'shekva kimu Yisrael Shabbat kodem Shabbat la Har Sinai. And he goes in and he essentially uses the biblical narrative as understood by the rabbis to be the discerning issue. Rav Shmuel Salant himself was asked about this. And his explanation was, let's look at source 23, Shayadut matchila im amila, that there are stages to becoming Jewish. It begins with the Brit Milah. Ela shekodem shetava yesh l'reshut lachzor, that till the going into the mikveh, he can still back out of it. And then after he goes to the mikveh, then he becomes a ger retroactively. And therefore he doesn't have to, because retroactively he was a Jewish the whole time. But if he breaks Shabbat, ki'ilu okir etamilah, then it would be as if he undid the Brit Milah. Now, the reason why we're here is because there were a number of people who analyzed this and said, hold it, you can be a partial Jew, and therefore you can be in a situation where you're sort of like a ger toshav, which is essentially what we were talking about. Anybody who claimed that essentially did it because of what's in source number 24, and that's the Rashba. Ella to a ger shamal velo taval. Rashba writes, what do you do about a ger who had a brit milah, was circumcised, but did not go to the mikveh yet? Because of her eno ger achi movi tvol. You know, obviously, person is not a full convert until he went to the mikveh. Kashali imkein aino goy v'afal pi shamal rehu ka'oral. He goes, if that's the case, how do the brit milah work? Because the brit milah is on a non-Jew, but he's still not Jewish till after he has the going to the mikveh, the immersion. But later he goes, no, that's wrong. Once you did the Brit Milah for the sake of Judaism, even though he didn't complete it, mikol makom kvar hitchil v'nichnas k'tzat bedat yehudit. He becomes, at that point, a partial Jew. And that's the reason why we went in this direction, because we realize there is this thing called this partial Jew. Now, just to complete this whole section before I move on to source 25 moving forward, please. The problem, of course, is...
It's terrible to think like that.
It's not terrible. The question is, what exactly is his status? And that's right. Really what I'm trying to show, is that there is right. This potentially this other case of somebody who is someplace in between, and we don't know exactly what to do with him. But just to finish this up, after all the sources back on page 11, I gave you a little bit of information about this Rav Asher Lemel, including I found his gravestone, and telling you a little bit about his life story, and including a rumor that he was murdered by missionaries. There are a lot of missionaries, and he did a lot of anti-missionary work in Jerusalem, and there is this rumor over here that he was actually murdered. That's on the top over here of page 12. ולפי השמועה החליטו לשים קץ לחייו באחר ויות מכשול רצוני בדרכם. באחד הלילות התנגב משומד אחד לביתו ונסח רעל בתוך סמי הרפואה שהיה רגיל לשתות וכן נפל חלל על משמרת הקודש. And that's how this Rav Lemel died. Now what's interesting is that he was involved in this conversion, but we... Again, this is just so you can look this up afterwards. We actually know the name of the convert. This is a picture of him, Michal Boaz Yisrael ben Avram. He was actually the first, well, maybe he was the first, because he was appointed to work for the, it wasn't the embassy at that point, it was the mission or whatever it was considered, and he was withdrawn almost immediately. And the whole story of the consul over here, his name was Warden Cresson. There's a whole story about him here, and he writes in his autobiography, "I remained in Jerusalem in my former faith until the 28th of March, 1848. And at that point, he tells us that he was circumcised, and he became a Jew when he's 49 years old, which essentially we have the story. And it wasn't me. Somebody had put this together. Just one more thing at the end. Herman Melville, Moby Dick author, I am quoting an author today, actually met this fellow in Jerusalem a number of years later. And he thought that he was out of his mind. By the way, his wife also thought he was out of his mind. She actually tried to get him locked up and take away all of his possessions. And at the end, he was found innocent of being out of his mind in an American court. Just because you convert to Judaism does not mean that you're out of your mind. But over here, and this was actually ruled in a court. He writes at the very end, Melville writes, "The idea of making farmers of Jews is vain. In the first place, Judea is a desert with few exceptions. In the second place, the Jews hate farming. And besides, the number of Jews in Palestine is comparatively small. And how are the hosts of them scattered in other lands to be brought here? Only by a miracle." So that is from the author of Moby Dick, Herman Melville, in 1856. He writes this. Very soon afterwards, a whole bunch of Jews come. Which then is going to lead us back to, we're going to move to the second part of what I wanted to get to. So we do have a couple of more minutes, and we're going to see how this is in fact connected. The Rambam will tell us in a number of places about this Ger Toshav. In source 25, he'll tell us, V'im kibel alav sheva mitzvot hareza Ger Toshav. So he followed the opinion that the Ger Toshav, not like Rashi described, he said a Ger Toshav is the person who keeps seven mitzvot. But then he adds, "Ve'ein makablin ger toshav elu zman shayov noeg." We don't accept ger toshavs today, so there is no such thing as a ger toshav today. So that sort of just got rid of everything I said today. So everything was for naught because there's no such thing as a ger toshav. The Beit Yosef, Rav Yosef Karo, wrote a commentary in the Rambam called the Kesef Mishnah, and he writes, "Uladat Rabbeinu Nira Lomer de'ein achinami she'im me'atzmo kibel alav shev mitzvot she'ein monin moto mi'yishivat ha'aretz v'lo ba'lomer el she'ein beitin makablim oto." So he says, no, it's not that there's no such thing as a ger toshav today. There is a ger toshav today, which I'm going to prove in the next couple of minutes. There is a ger toshav today, but we don't accept them formally. They're able to just do it themselves by accepting these things upon themselves, and then they have the right to live in the land of Israel. And as I said, this is not, you know, just anybody. This is Rav Yosef Karo writes this in source number 26. There's a bunch more things in the Rambam about Ger Toshav, which we're skipping. But notice something. In the Shulchan Aruch, in source number 30, and we're going to start in Yeridea, it says, Ger Toshav, Dehainu, Shekibet Lo Shev HaMitzvah, V'chein Ger Shemo V'lo Taval, Mag'an Asar V'shtia. He goes into the status of somebody who had a Brit Milah, didn't have Tefillah yet, or someone is a Ger Toshav, and he writes about both of those cases together, which is, by the way, one of the reasons why we think it makes a lot of sense to combine them. And he talks just in terms of their status of touching wine and so on. I'm not getting into more of that case. In source 31, in Choshe Mishpat, Goy She'enu Ger Toshav, Asur Latet Lo Matana. By the way, what do you get from this? A non-Jew who's not a Ger Toshav, you should not be giving them presents for no reason, right? Only do things for Derech HaShalom. The implication is, but what if he is a Ger Toshav? Then things are very, very different, including, by the way, the rights to live in the land of Israel. In source number 22, Adam Mitzuveh Shvitat Avdo, this is the laws of Shabbat, the Shulchan Aruch writes, Adam Mitzuveh Shvitat Avdo Shamal V'Taval L'Shem Avdut V'Kibel Av Mitzvah Nenoget Be'Evid Aval Im Lo Malvot Taval Ela Kibel Alav Shev Mitzvah Bein Noach Harei Hu Kiger Toshav V'Mutar La'asot Melacha B'Shabbat La'atzmo Aval Lo L'Rabo. You know, what I said before from Tosfot, it actually makes its way into the Shulchan Aruch, this idea that the Ger Toshav, or somebody who's like a Ger Toshav, there is this Kiger Toshav there. But the most, okay, so far, what I wanted you to see is that the idea of a Ger Toshav not only makes it into the Rambam, but it makes it into the Shulchan Aruch. Now, here is going to be the thing which hopefully will be really interesting, and I told you there's two more pieces that I need to get to today. 33 is written by a book called the Darkei Moshe. The Darkei Moshe is better known to all of us as the Ramah, Rav Moshe Iserlish. This is his commentary to the Torah. He writes, V'ayin b'yeredeya, katafti sham, digir toshav u'mamzer asum l'chtov sefer Torah. So, yes, it writes, in source 34, it says, sefer Torah shekatav mamzer yesh poslim. There are some who say that a mamzer shouldn't write a sefer Torah. The Ramah adds, v'hu adin ger toshav. A ger toshav can't write a sefer Torah. That's added by the Ramah based on a source called the Mordechai. But back in source 33, he writes, miunira de bitfilin of mezuzot ein lachush v'ein shamatam. But he says, it seems to me that the Ger Toshav is allowed to write tefillin and allowed to write mezuzot. Now, it's at this point, I hope somebody is still with me here. Is anybody still with me? I hope somebody is still with me, because over here it just now got a little more interesting, and I want to try to explain everything we're looking at right now. What's the logic? Why can't this person write a Sefer Torah? Because he didn't accept all the mitzvot, so not all the Torah applies to him. Because not all the Torah applies to him, he's not part of Am Yisrael, it doesn't apply to him because he didn't accept all of it. So he can't write it. But why should he be allowed to write a mezuzah, or why should he be allowed to write tefillin? So the Magen Avraham writes, explaining this Darkei Moshe, he writes, and it says, "V'nirli the tefillin mezuzot in lachush," and he brings the same teaching of the Ramah, but no, he should be able to write tefillin and mezuzot. Now, source number 36 is really also quite authoritative, and that's part of what I want you to see, because we're dealing with the Ramah, the Magen Avraham, and finally the Bir Halacha is the Mishnah Berurah, and the Mishnah Berurah is going to explain what it is we're talking about. So he says, "V'tzarech." Now, first of all, he's talking back when we were discussing the Ger Toshav or the laws of Shabbat, but he's going to do the same thing again over here regarding the laws of writing the mezuzah. So let's take a look. I'm going to skip the other one for now, but I'm telling you, he essentially says the same thing, but this one's a little shorter and clearer. Source 37, that the Ger Toshav is kosher l'chtov tefillin. Calls the Ayri Begir Tzedek. He goes, no, it must be when we say a Ger, it's a Ger Tzedek. Ule Inin Ger Toshav, his Skimu, Haprima Gadim, and he starts quoting some other Achronim here, but Od Harbei, to Pasimatam, to Ha'ena Bekshira, that the rule of writing tefillin is, Ukshartem Uktaftem, whoever's in the mitzvah of putting on tefillin can write it. By the way, that would be a reason that a woman would not be allowed to write tefillin because she's not in the mitzvah of Kshira. Now, this is the point I wanted to get to. The Sherei Tshuva, he says something, himtzi, makes up something new. The Ayri Darkei Moshe, he's explaining to Darkei Moshe, the Machshir Begir Toshav, the Kibbal Alav, Kol HaMitzvot Chutz Mi Isur Nevela. Going back to what we had already seen in the Gemara. He accepts upon himself the mitzvah of putting on tefillin, and he accepts upon himself of having a mezuzah. If he accepted upon himself, then he's included within that mitzvah. If he's included in that mitzvah, he's allowed to write a mezuzah. He's allowed to write a tefillin, because he accepted upon himself that mitzvah. The imkain haloyesh no bikshira ve'emet nir levidaiti shegamze eino delo akol panem eino muzorik shira v'teida da'atu im isha ve'eved yikablu aleim mitzvot tefillin yuksherim lechtivat tefillin. By the way, that's the Mishnah Berurah writing. It's okay. None of the feminist organizations have ever quoted this, as to the best of my knowledge, because who's going and learning the Ber Halacha? He just said that if a woman accepts upon herself this mitzvah, she can then write tefillin. Ve'im titchem mishum democh, and if you can say, no, but it says that demochin l'nashim al nachat tefillin, we tell women don't, we protest, don't put on tefillin. Why do we protest? Basically, even men minimize the mitzvah of putting on tefillin. They should wear it all day, but we don't. So we try to minimize it because you need concentration and kavanah to have tefillin on, and therefore we minimize it. So therefore there's this chumrah as well, that if a woman says, you're not obligated, don't do it. He goes, the kol zerach machmat chumrah ba'alma, shek choshim lahapsikta, aval shasti lansar v'dein mochin. He goes, no, our Gemara really doesn't say that you protest. Then I'll skip a little. The gam lefizem, isha tekebel atzma mitzvah tzitzit, yek shera, aflor b'tanla, so tzitzit lanashim. So essentially saying, again, just realize what just now happened, because this all got very confusing. Essentially, the argument that somebody could accept upon themselves mitzvot, which we've seen to be the category of the ger toshav, he's saying, yeah, that's true by ger toshav, but it's also true by women. That anybody wants to accept upon themselves more mitzvot, that becomes obligatory. And once it's obligatory, now you fit into that category as well. So therefore, I'm not going to say much more about this, but I want to get to one more issue which is involved in it. So much for the feminism, and now we finally have to get back to our laws connected to Shemitah. The Chazon Ish was really against the Heter Mechira. In this short little passage here, I underlined with my orange marker, I don't know if you can all see it, a couple of different lines. I know that it's not that clear. That's the best I can do with the Chazon Ish here. But essentially he talks about, so let's go back a second. The Chazon Ish objected to the Heter Mechira. Okay, what exactly is the Heter Mechira? A Heter Mechira is that we sell the land of Israel to somebody who is not Jewish. And when we sell the land of Israel to them, now there's no Kedushat Shviyid, which is based upon some assumptions. But there were those who argued and said, hold it a second. You're not allowed to sell the land of Israel to an idolater. You're not allowed to sell it to somebody. Now, there is one exception. You can sell parts of the land to a ger toshav, because a ger toshav is allowed to live here. So therefore, if a ger toshav category exists, then the law of Shemitah, or the Heter Mechira, I'm not going to say it's a slam dunk and now works going to everybody, but what I will say is I just took away the major objection. The Netziv is quoted as saying, but it's actually not him. He's actually quoting somebody else who says, you may have avoided the laws of Shemitah, which most likely are Drabanan, but you've broken a Torah law by selling parts of the land of Israel to somebody who's not allowed, you're not allowed to sell it to. But if there's a category of Ger Toshav, they're allowed to live in Israel. They're allowed to be here. So if there's such a thing as a Ger Toshav, then there shouldn't be a problem. Now, one of the things that Esti wrote, hold it, what about Arabs? How do they fit into that? Is Islam's not a Avodah Zarah? That's one of the things that Rav Kook said. Rav Kook said, hold it a second. They're monotheists. They've rejected Avodah Zarah. They should be considered to be a Ger Toshav regarding these laws. So I'm going to pause there for a second. But one of the things that also that the Chazon Ish claimed, he says, you're not allowed to sell the land of Israel. If you're not allowed to sell the land of Israel, then there's such a thing as Ein Shliach Dvar Avera. You can't appoint someone to sell it. And then he has what's a radical interpretation of Ein Shliach Dvar Avera. He claims it doesn't work. It didn't work. So he says the whole Heter Mechira doesn't work because you're selling to someone you're not allowed to. You're using a Shliach. So it doesn't work. The Heter Mechira doesn't work. Now, if I go backwards now, if there is such a thing as a Ger Toshav, and he's allowed to be in the land of Israel, and I'm allowed to sell him part of the land, I'm allowed to have him live here, he's allowed to buy a farm, So if that's the case, then the Chazon Ish's argument kind of falls apart. And if that's the case, the Heter Mechira suddenly got a lot stronger. Now, this whole argument I just now gave you, it's interesting because a lot of people talk about the Ger Toshav part independently of the whole Heter Mechira issue. So just for example, I mean, this is just interesting because you're going to have somebody, let's say, source number 39, is the head of the Eid HaRedis, who's absolutely, Rav Moshe Sternbach, absolutely against the Heter Mechira. He writes, I mean, he went through the same sources that I did, and he says, yeah, you can't accept a Ger Toshav. Ayin B'shach, Demaskan L'tod, Ger Shamal, V'lo Tavo, Chal Bo Din, Ger Toshav. And remember the case that I brought along the way. Anybody that had Brit Milah and didn't do Tefillah yet, they are a Ger Toshav. That was the whole case we went to in the middle. He goes, but hold it, L'chor Akasha, this is difficult. Ayin Din Ger Toshav B'zman Ezeh. So then he goes on to say, no, we don't go and accept it, but if somebody accepts upon themselves whatever the status is of a Ger Toshav, then it applies. And in source number 40, he goes into this with great length, including quoting the Bir Halacha that we just now quoted, and a lot of the other sources that he quoted. And then he goes, Katavti chidush nifla de'ein halacha de'lo chal din Ger Toshav b'zman hazeh. There's no such thing as there's no Ger Toshav b'zman hazeh. Which, by the way, he doesn't know or he doesn't admit that he's arguing with the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish says, no, it doesn't apply today. The Rambam says, doesn't apply. He goes, of course it applies. And by the way, I can say it a little bit stronger. Of course it applies. How do I know it applies? It's in the Shulchan Aruch in multiple places. It was there in Yeruday, it was there in Chosha Mishpat, it was there in Aruch Chaim, the Darkei Moshe brings it, the Magen Avraham brings it, the Bir Halacha brings it. All these nice Orthodox rabbis kind of really think that this idea of the Ger Toshav does exist. And if that's the case, then the argument against the Heter Mechira just now kind of fell apart. So I hope that all the twists and turns that I took, they weren't complicated. Everything I did today was simple. The only problem was, is I spoke about concepts that we're not all that familiar with necessarily. But I hope you appreciate that I just want to go back and try to, you know, do a recap of what we did. We probably started today thinking you have a Jew and you have a non-Jew and there's nothing else in the middle. What we learned along the way is that you could have something in the middle, and that thing in the middle is actually debated by Tanayim where that line is, including an opinion that maybe somebody can accept 10 mitzvot, 20 mitzvot, 50 mitzvot, 612 mitzvot. What makes you still Ger Toshav? You still want to eat your nevela, so you're a Ger Toshav, but you can accept everything else. Again, if that's the case, then you have the right to live in Eretz Yisrael. If you have the right to live in Eretz Yisrael, I'm allowed to sell you my farm as well. I'm allowed to sell you my farm, so now I have a solution in terms of Shemitah. This person who accepts the mitzvot upon them, that's binding, but what's fascinating in the Bir Halach, he goes, yeah, but that's true by women as well. They can also accept upon themselves mitzvot. And why am I so convinced that nobody ever heard that before? But look at the Bir Halacha said it. Look, I'm not saying things right now, halacha lemaaseh, one way or the other. I just think that that's really kind of interesting that he went into that discussion of even allowing a woman to write mezuzot and to write tefillin because she could accept upon himself. Whether that's his bottom line or not, I'm not saying. I'll leave this for poskim among us to come to this conclusion. But that itself should be interesting. But as I said, at the end of the day, you have lots and lots of implications of this. Yes, that famous story of the convert from Morocco who turned out to be from Pennsylvania, that he was in this situation of right between. And now you see the Shach actually wrote black and white. Yeah, that is the status of a Ger Toshav. Well, a Ger Toshav has to break Shabbat. Well, not necessarily. Because the Ger Toshav could accept upon himself Shabbat, just like he can accept anything else. And this person actually accepted all 613 commandments upon him. He just didn't do one of them yet, and that was going into the mikvah. So therefore, this idea that someone can be someplace in the middle, you know, a world, we like worlds which are black and white, and to realize that, look at all these different shades here along the way, and the Tanaim themselves are trying to figure out what this means. So as long as somebody who's not Jewish still wants to eat nevela, they can still be a Ger Toshav. And I just want to add one more thing. The Heter Mechira that was done 6.5 years ago was actually sold to somebody who came from the former Soviet Union, who served in the Israeli army, whose family was Jewish, his father was Jewish, his mother was not Jewish, and he stood in front of a Beit Din and said, I accept upon myself the Sheva Mitzvah Bnei Noach, I accept upon myself not to do Avodah Zarah, and he was the one who they facilitated and did the Heter Mechira with, and for some reason this was not known at all by anybody other than like the three people, me and two others who saw the article. And that was a game changer in terms of Het Mechira. Now, one last thing. All of you people who are in Chutz La'aretz and all of your kashrut organizations are like members of the BDS, and you guys are boycotting Israeli products because it says the words Het Mechira on it. So I think especially today, when there is a really public boycotting of Israel goes on, I think this is the time to wake up and to realize the Het Mechira is a really good heter. It's a really strong heter. The objections that some people have heard hurled against it don't necessarily exist. The fact that it was sold, and I believe again will be sold this year to somebody who has the rights to live in Israel and is very much part of the, I'm not going to say the Jewish life, but supports the Jewish life over here, is really a game changer in terms of how the Het Mechira was implemented. And it's time as well for instead of, I'll say it again, boycotting Israeli products. And there are nice, good religious Jews and conscious organizations who boycotted all 7 years because they're worried about Trumot and Masrot and all kinds of other things. I think that we should become a little bit more more educated and be prepared to say, oh, it says it was the Het Mechira over here. That's okay. I'm allowed to eat that. So I hope I said enough controversial things for one day. So go ahead. You can ask any questions that you wish.
Rabbi, so with this Het Mechira,
yeah.
I know you said you're so involved with it. So according to that, what is this current shviat where the farmers are saying, Ani mekabel alai shmita? In other words, all these farmers, you know, you're seeing all these, these foundations to support these farmers, but could they be working?
I don't want to get into this, but I will say that Shemitah has always been and always will be big business. I don't know. I would look very carefully and find out who those farmers are. I mean, honestly, you show me who the Jews are still working in farming today. I'd just love to see it. As it is, one of the things, my point about the BDS, I'll say it again, is that in today's world, when people boycott Israeli products, and some of the people who boycott Israeli products are religious Jews, there's something distasteful about that. And I think that part of the reason that they boycott is out of a lack of knowledge about what really takes place. And I'll say again, one of the things about the Het Mechira that was insisted is that Jews maybe shouldn't do working. No Jews are working the land today. I hate to say it. It's all foreign workers that are working the land. So today, there's really three choices that are put up. There are those people who are farmers who say, no, I will not do work. Again, I don't want to say anything bad. I would just want to see how this follows all the way to the farmer. I'd like to see the trail about who the farmers is. I'd love to see the personal story. I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I would just love to see it. The other thing is the Otzer Beitin, which is a whole other talk, which I have severe problems with. And I just happen to think that the Het Mechira is a stronger heter than the other solutions are. As far as not working, I can assure you, I and all my neighbors, we won't work during Shemitah. Which means it does apply, and anybody wants to support me during the Shemitah year, I'd be very willing for you to buy into my rest. I won't be doing more than we need to do to keep the fruits or the trees alive. You're able to support us over here. We're very happy to share this mitzvah with you. But what the issue really is, when it comes to something, you know, just think for a second. If Israel is involved in exporting flowers to all places in Europe, if you lose the market, you lose the market. On top of that is that all of the non-religious farmers that are working over there, they're not resting over Shviat. It's happening. They're working, and therefore the Het Mechira is the right thing in this time, especially when you keep in mind that Shemitah Bizman is Durabanan. So as I said in the beginning, I was going to get to Shemitah at the end. You just didn't know how I was going to get there, but I was going to get to Shemitah. And I just hope that the trail that we took in order to get there was interesting to see some of these sources. I always personally think learning things that are new that I'm not familiar with is interesting. And I think there's just a lot of, you know, new uncharted territory over here along the way.
Okay, great. I also have two questions.
Yeah.
One was when we were talking about Avira Le Gertosha, in other words, what you're allowed to ask them to do and not allowed to do. Is that same as Amira Nafri?
It's worse.
Or is there a difference?
It's worse. He can't do work for you. Amira Achi is a technical problem. I'm not allowed to say it. But this is, no, Amir al-Nakhi is a technical problem. It's there's three different opinions why I can't do Amir al-Nakhi, but at least going to some of the davar davar, certain things I can't talk about. So it's a problem of talking. But let's say I said before Shabbat to the non-Jew, can you do something for me? So it's possible it's okay then. It's not, I didn't say something bad, and that's why you hinted. No. If this person has a mitzvah to rest, he can't do work for me. It doesn't make a difference if I hint or not hint, he can't do work for me. The mamzer you also asked about. Yeah, so there was an opinion, a yesh omrim over there. He said, some say, which I understand it to be, that they want a Torah to have something which is perfect kedusha, and I also understand why this would be disturbing.
Yeah, it was very disturbing when I okay. saw that. Just
yes.
one word.
Yes, okay. yes, understood.
Thank you so much.
Understood.
Thank you very much. Very informative and insightful, and I definitely think realms that we have not heard much about. So thank you, Rikon.
Okay.
I'm afraid to delve into these issues. It's refreshing.
Okay, very good. Be well.